Chapter 1, Turning It All Over to God. It was now March of 2010, and I was worried. Over a year of searching for help, sending out emails, and making phone calls. Nevertheless, they all appeared to be dead ends. Though one friend had now agreed to help in designing the bridge's foundations, that was only step one. Step two was actually going to Nicaragua and doing a survey at the bridge site, analyzing the soil conditions, and then producing detailed drawings so a material cost estimate could be prepared. The material cost estimate was so my church and the town of Matiwas would know the financial commitment it would take to build the bridge. Then an important point popped in my mind. I was an electrical engineer, not a civil engineer. Being a registered professional engineer, I knew what the code of ethics for professional engineers said about practicing engineering outside of one's field of expertise, meaning if the bridge fell, I could lose my license, but even worse than that, I could be sued by the Nicaraguan government. There appeared to be a lot of risk associated with the project for not only me personally, but also my church. And several questions remained. Questions like, who would build the bridge? To what standard of construction, and to what strength of concrete? I was out of answers. The enormity of this project had finally started to sink in. All the issues, all the logistics, and all the unknowns. Maybe this is why no one had come forward to help. Maybe this project was too big. To tell someone we wanted to build a 250-foot pedestrian walking bridge across a raging river in Nicaragua did sound crazy. Where was my faith in God, you might ask? A God who could fit this bridge project in the palm of his hand? To me, this was not yet a faith project, but merely a physical bridge with physical engineering design problems. And besides, what other door was there for me to knock on? As an engineer, I had done everything humanly possible to tap into engineering resources, but still nothing. Only wasted time waiting for answers that never came and watching doors that never opened. It now seemed for once in my life I had taken on a project that I simply could not find a solution for. This project needed a big engineering firm to get involved, someone with a lot of expertise and a proven track record. At this point, I had exhausted all of my personal resources, so where were the answers? Prayers had been offered, but still no answers. But then on Monday, March 8th, I received an email from Douglas. He had heard about the bridge project last year from my neighbor, Robert. I remembered him sending me pictures and information for a few bridges he saw while on vacation last year. I had even contacted one of the engineering firms who had constructed one of those bridges, which looked like something that could be built in Nicaragua. But like all the others, that door never opened either. So I was really shocked that after an entire year, he would still remember my church's bridge project. In his email, Douglas explained opening the state newspaper's Sunday edition and seeing a story in the Parade magazine, a small insert included in the Sunday newspaper each week. After reading the story, he remembered my church's bridge project. He didn't know the status of our project, but felt led to scan the story and email it to me. As I opened the attachment, the title of the story immediately caught my eye. Building Bridges of Hope. Moved by a Plight Away, One Man Takes Action. As I read those words, I began to ponder. Maybe God has a plan for this bridge after all. The story was about a man named Ken France and Bridges to Prosperity, a nonprofit organization he founded in 2001, and their work building pedestrian footbridges in developing countries. The story listed some of the existing countries where Bridges to Prosperity had built bridges, which included Ethiopia, Nepal, Indonesia, and South America, but not Nicaragua. I read a little bit more before tossing it to the side on my desk. I thought to myself, here's someone building bridges exactly like the one we need to build in Nicaragua. but how would I convince them to help my church with our bridge? And besides, why would they be any different than the others I had already tried to contact? That story sat on my desk till Friday. When I went to throw it away, somehow one word caught my eye. Nicaragua. What? How did I miss that before? Further down in the article, it plainly stated they were looking to build bridges in Nicaragua. Chills covered my body as I started at the beginning and read the entire article. Over a year of looking for an open door, and now, could this be it? An article in a magazine? With all the emails sent to engineers and universities, and now, to finally get an answer to my prayer in an emailed story. I got very excited about this possibility, but then reality began to sink in. We all know the old saying, if something is too good to be true, then it probably is. And for me, a person who easily gets overly optimistic, it usually is. Why would a world-known company like Bridges to Prosperity stop to help a small country church in Blythewood, South Carolina, build a bridge in Nicaragua? I spent that Saturday helping my wife clean the house. After taking a much-needed break, I pulled out the Building Bridges of Hope story from my folder and reread it, just to see if their website was given. To my surprise, it wasn't, but after reviewing the printed email, Douglas had included the Bridges to Prosperity website address. Hoping for good results, I typed in www.bridgestoprosperity.org. This appeared to be their official company website. It was well laid out, even with a Contact Us pull-down tab. The contact name listed was for Avery, and her email address was included. Well, I thought, it's at least a door. So I knocked. That night I typed at the computer for several hours what would soon become a 4-page dissertation. March 13th, 2010. Dear Avery, let me start off by saying that in life, finding people to dedicate their time, much less their career, to helping other people is rare. It appears you and Ken France are two such people, and I commend you for that. I was really moved by the recent article in Parade titled Building Bridges of Hope, which is the reason I have contacted you. Let me first give you some background of my church's involvement in Nicaragua. Sandy Level Baptist Church in Blythewood, South Carolina, has a long embedded history in mission work. Each year for over 12 years, my church helped individual mission teams go to Nicaragua. My church, along with other congregations, has built a feeding center and several other buildings to help the poorest of poor in several communities in Nicaragua, such as those near Matagalpa, due east from Managua. Church members Mike and Butch generally serve as project leaders, organizing materials and labor well in advance of each trip. I have never personally been, but I always enjoyed the local mission trips I would participate in during spring break while a student at Clemson University. I share a strong passion for helping other people. In 2008, Mike received word from his friend in Nicaragua that a much-needed mission project was to construct a walking bridge across a river. During the rainy season, the mountain river floods, naturally I know, to the point it is not safe to cross, which cuts off a village of people and farmers from the mainland. To get supplies or to sell their milk, they risked their lives by forming a line while holding hands, men, women, and even children, to pass supplies across. Mr. France, in the Parade article, recalls witnessing a similar situation. During such a time, a wall of water suddenly rushed down on them, and a whole family was tragically swept away. Several other individuals have also drowned while attempting to cross the river. In December of 2008, the Nicaragua mission team met and discussed plans for the bridge. Mike presented his idea for the bridge and what details he could remember about each proposed foundation location and the distance, which is approximately 300 feet. As I listened and processed this information, I began to ask questions and soon realized that no actual engineering analysis had been done to ensure the bridge would be safe. Factors such as wind, adequate width to prevent twisting, cable tensions, total calculated weight of the bridge with people on it, moments of inertia on the foundations, sway, etc. But as they say, those that speak get volunteered. I was appointed the job to do the math and design. Now, as an electrical engineer, just because I know these terms and understand them doesn't mean I can apply the engineering principles correctly the first time without failure, which would mean wasted resources of labor and materials. My experience? As an electrical engineer for an electric distribution cooperative, I have overseen the design of 5 electrical distribution substations, which all involve wire tensions and moments on steel structures. I am familiar with spread footer foundations as well as drilled pier foundations for these structures and the application of each. However, building a substation you do from the ground up, but a rope wire bridge is suspended above a river or dry land, which introduces construction techniques above my level of expertise. If it were a dry gorge crossing, a simpler way would be to construct the bridge on the ground, then hoist it into place. But with a river, this may prove too difficult to accomplish. We need a team of experts who can show us the tried and proven methods of construction. In March of 2009, I contacted several friends at the Department of Transportation, DOT, to see if anyone there had ever designed such a project. No one had. However, I did learn that one of the coaches in my son's basketball league was a supervisor over the Highway Department's Bridge Foundation design team and also supervised the foundation work at the new Cooper River Bridge in Charleston here in South Carolina. We have since talked and he is confident he can design the foundations given enough information about the soil conditions and available construction area in case a spread footer needs to be employed if the soil is too rocky to adequately excavate. Also in March of 2009, I searched the internet for suspended cable bridges and suspension bridges and found what I feel to be an excellent resource entitled Short Span Trail Bridge Standard Suspended Type Volume 1 Guidelines for Survey, Design, and Construction and Short Span Trail Bridge Standard Suspension Type Volume 1 Guidelines for Survey, Design, and Construction. I have thoroughly reviewed both of these documents and feel that the suspended type is a much simpler design to construct. I have included for your review to see if they are good documents to follow and provide any comments on these documents. Now, you may be asking, a year has gone by with no progress on the bridge. Even though I have been put in charge of the design, material, and construction portion of the bridge, Mike and Butch are still the organizers of the trip, which did include a medical unit and vacation Bible school leader. Unfortunately, last year Mike had to undergo back surgery for his disc, and Butch had to have heart bypass surgery, so the trip was postponed until 2010, which puts us to where we are today. We were planning to leave this Friday for Nicaragua and fly into Managua. During this trip, we were to reevaluate both sides of the river crossing, take additional measurements, and perform soil excavations for classification. But with already limited resources, Mike decided this week to postpone the trip until after Easter to hopefully get better airline fares. In the meantime, someone who remembered the project sent me the article from Parade, which had a link to the Bridges to Prosperity website. The website says you are out of the country until the end of April in Guatemala. Avery, I realize this is short notice and may seem awkward to ask, but I would be so honored to meet you and learn more about the organization you work for during my trip in April, and I would be even more grateful and appreciative like you couldn't imagine if you could go to the site of the proposed bridge crossing with me and either give our team of volunteers advice or take it on as one of the Building Bridges of Hope projects for Nicaragua this year. That would be awesome, and I would give you and your organization 2 weeks of my vacation time in the summer to help with the construction of this bridge. I promise you that. I don't mind using a shovel or getting wet, and am a great problem solver. Also, there are villagers who are more than eager to help with the foundation work and construction of the bridge, which is one of your group's requirements. In closing, I only ask that you and your organization strongly consider helping my church's Nicaragua mission team take this bridge from the planning stages to reality. Don't take this the wrong way, but the need is so great for this bridge that we will build it anyways and hopefully be successful the first time. But having a knowledgeable engineer such as you to talk to would give me greater confidence in not only the design but the construction. If you decline, then any advice or construction tips you can share or forward, including construction pictures, would be much appreciated. Thank you for your time. Thomas S. Black, Jr., P.E. Copy, Ken France. After I had finished typing, I sat back and carefully read back over it, making sure I hadn't made any spelling or grammatical errors, at least none that would have been apparent to an engineer. Since I didn't have an email account set up on my home computer, I saved the letter on a thumb drive and drove to my office. Even though it was 9:30 p.m. on a Saturday night, this was the most important letter I had ever written. As I lay in bed that night, the question of what would these people think about my letter raced through my mind. But most importantly, would they respond? This was probably the best opportunity I had come across in over a year for turning the bridge project into a reality, but most importantly, for it to be successful. I felt a small sense of hope, knowing this might be the one open door I had been praying for. The next day at church seemed to be business as usual, Sunday school, choir, and then Pastor Ben's sermon. As Pastor Ben began the time of invitation, my mind drifted to the thoughts of Avery or Ken opening the email I had sent to them the night before. Would they respond to an email sent by a complete stranger, or even worse, were they such a big company that my email would be lost among the hundreds of others they must receive each day? I knew I had done all I could, putting forth my best effort. I reflected back on all I had done, all my efforts in trying to get the bridge project off the ground, many nights spent searching the internet. But then it suddenly occurred to me, I was trying to do it all on my own. The number of prayers I had offered on behalf of the bridge project, I could count on one hand. For this project to be successful, that had to change. This was turning out to be a faith project, whether I wanted it to or not. I wasn't sure what God had in plan for this project or what the extent of my involvement would be, but I needed, once and for all, to turn it all over to Him. As the invitation hymn began to play, I was reminded it was my Sunday to help set up the visitor table outside. The visitor's table allows guests to receive a bag which contains information about our church, a prayer guide, and the church's newsletter. I quickly made my way outside to help another deacon set up the table and the bags. Then I realized that for me to go down to the altar, I would have to enter through the main sanctuary doors and walk down the long aisle in front of everyone. Going forward during the altar call was not something I did regularly, probably not even once a year. But maybe this was His plan, for me to confess my lack of faith in front of witnesses. Walking up to the sanctuary doors, I peered through one window to see if the congregation was still singing, and they were. I eased the door open as quietly as I could, slipped inside, and slowly closed it behind me. The pastor at first didn't see me as I slowly made my way down to the front of the sanctuary. I was definitely a bit nervous. As I took Pastor Ben's hand and leaned in towards him, I confessed my lack of faith. I also confessed the reason the bridge project was no farther along than a year ago was because I was trying to do it all. But now I'm turning it all over to God because I had accomplished nothing on my own. I told him about the article on Bridges to Prosperity and to pray for a response to a 4-page letter I had emailed to Avery and Ken the night before. I also asked him to pray for me.